This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Good afternoon. Happy Saturday, and it is a happy one for White Sox fans. Last time we convened here on White Sox Weekly, a week ago, the White Sox, at least from my perspective, were in a bit of a bad spot. Because if you'll recall, they had lost four in a row at that point, having lost the final two games to the Kansas City Royals, and then having dropped two in a row to the Yankees. They were about to lose a third straight that evening on Saturday night at Wrigley Field to the Yankees. And it was definitely a low point for me. At some point this season, because there was so much optimism building, and it was a roller coaster week, because prior to that, the White Sox had run up a streak of 27 straight scoreless innings before they blew that first game that they lost to the Royals. And so all the good stuff that they had built up felt like it came undone for a short stretch there last week. Well, that was last week. That's in the past. The White Sox have now won six games in a row in comeback fashion. They have never done that as an organization. First time in White Sox history. And if you've been listening all year, you know it's the 125th season of White Sox baseball. So to do something that's never been done in the history of the organization is quite the accomplishment. And the way the White Sox have been doing it has been, I think, exactly the way you would draw it up if you're a White Sox fan. Consider, first of all, I mean, don't take this for the way it's intended. When I say they're doing it exactly the way you want them to do it, I want to point out that with Luis Robert and Miguel Vargas on the IL, that the White Sox offense, at least over this stretch of games, was going to have some additional complications. But Colson Montgomery is not just a White Sox story, but he is becoming a story around Major League Baseball with what he's been able to do. He homered for the 18th time this season, the 18th time in his career, and the 18th time in the last 37 games. Gave him a 14-game buffer to get acclimated. He picked up a torpedo bat, and before you know it, that has unlocked everything for Colson Montgomery in his swing. Now, it's not just the torpedo bat. Colson Montgomery has always had talent. There's a reason why he was a top 100 prospect across baseball. But that has certainly melded with what Colson Montgomery has wanted to do. His swing has been unlocked. Again, 18 home runs in the last 37 games. He is finding ways not just to homer as well, but he's also driving in runs at a prolific rate, 40 RBIs. You know, since the second half of the season began, the All-Star break, Colson Montgomery has really seemed to find his stroke. So the White Sox have won six in a row, all in comeback fashion, and they've done so without two of the heart of the order hitters in Miguel Vargas and Luis Robert. And of course, Luis Robert has had, you know, his struggles this season, but he in the second half was also really playing to that all-star caliber level that you come to expect from Luis Robert. He had gotten back into a groove. So when he hit the injured list with the hamstring injury, which of course certainly puts the remainder of his season in doubt, for the White Sox offense to come alive the way it has over the last six games has been absolutely very exciting. And it's not just Colson Montgomery. Kyle Teal now is becoming the player he was in AAA Charlotte, where he was winning, you know, White Sox Player of the Month awards in the early part of the season back in April. He has really, really risen to the occasion, and he's kind of carving out his spot near the top of the order, whether it be in the leadoff spot, the two spot, the three spot. How about Edgar Caro and Kyle Teal going 1-2? That's something that Will Venable has played around with the last couple of games, and not just having them both in the lineup, but having them both at the top of the lineup, because honestly, they're two of his best hitters. And Love to see Will Venable not run away from the idea of getting, you know, the two hitters he probably trusts amongst the most, aside from maybe the veterans, Talkman, you know, and Benintendi, in terms of getting on base, putting them up in the order. You know, catchers be damned. You know, get out of the mind frame of a catcher can't lead off. Catcher's too slow. Kyle Teal, Edgar Caro, both athletic players, both young enough that, you know what, if they're getting on base, they're making good contact and they're threats at the plate, get them up high in the order. That's something that Will Venable has showed us he is more than willing to do the last couple times. And I would imagine, based on the results that we've seen from them both being at the top of the order, that's something that I would anticipate seeing more often the remainder of the season. Again, though, Colson Montgomery, you know, he's becoming the middle of the order hitter that you envisioned he could be in the minor leagues if you're Chris Getz, you know, and consider what he's done this year coming back from an absolute horrendous March, April, a little bit into May, where, and then he had to go to Arizona and the White Sox complex and completely rework his swing with Ryan Fuller, who met the media actually at near the end of last week. And we're going to play that for you if you missed it. Lots of good stuff from Ryan Fuller, the White Sox director of hitting, who spoke. And we're going to let you hear from him later in White Sox Weekly. But he worked individually with Colson Montgomery to rework that swing, get it to the point where he is most dangerous. And we're seeing, you know, what could be a burgeoning superstar on the south side. And, oh, by the way, he's also playing a more than capable shortstop for the White Sox. And I think that was the other question, was could Colson Montgomery handle shortstop? And so far in the 51 or so games that he's played here at the major league level, I think he has acclimated himself more than well. And I think you're looking at between him and, you know, you've got Chase Mydroth as well, his keystone combo mates, whether Mydroth is playing second base or if they have the flexibility and they occasionally want to work them in at Mydroth at short, Montgomery at third. We've seen that work as well. How about Curtis Meade? He's getting a chance to finally play and get some consistent at-bats. He's always been somebody who around baseball was thought to have a good hit tool, and he's starting to make a little bit of a home for himself here with the opportunities that he's been given since the White Sox acquired him from Tampa Bay in the Adrian Hauser deal. So Chase Mydroth, I just mentioned him, another four-hit day from him this past week. And again, they go in to Minnesota to start their seven-game road trip, and they sweep the Twins in a four-game series. That's right. They took four from the Twins. That's the first time the White Sox have ever done that, when they went into Minnesota and they swept a four-game series. You know, the Twins have always been a nuisance for the White Sox, and at the very least, even when the Twins have struggled, they've usually been a difficult task for the White Sox, at least when they go to Minnesota. But for the White Sox to come back and, you know, take all four, and I'll point out, it's not just the comeback fashion, but the way the White Sox won the fourth and final game of their series in Minnesota at Target Field on Thursday night after a 90-minute rain delay before they even got a chance to start the game, and then to come back after trailing and that one, to come back and win that one. Listen, the way base getaway day, long rain delay, the White Sox had already won the series, right? And, oh, by the way, too, they were working with somewhat of a bullpen day. Jonathan Cannon got an opportunity on Thursday to make his big league return. It did not go well. He gave up 5 earned runs and 2 1/3 innings pitched. It would have been, I think, very easy for the White Sox to kind of fold it up after they were trailing 5-3 after Cannon really struggled in the fourth inning. It would have been really easy to kind of just fold it up, trying to get through the game, and then get away for Detroit on Friday. But that's not what the White Sox did. That's not what they've done all year. What they've done is basically treat every game like they've always got a chance to come back. And Kyle Teal had a big game in that one. I mentioned him. Colson Montgomery, of course, you look through the box scores this week, you're hard-pressed to find a game when Colson Montgomery didn't make an impact. And usually he was homering at some point, but both Teal and Montgomery homer in that one on Thursday against the Twins after a long rain delay. And again, it would have been very easy for the White Sox to just kind of say, you know what, mentally check out, get ready for Detroit. But that's not what they did. They came back and won that one with 5 big runs in the seventh, again with that three-run blast by Kyle Teal, kind of setting the stage for the comeback. And now they've won six games in a row, all in comeback fashion. It's been absolutely extraordinary, and this has got me excited. There's been lots of little pieces throughout the season for the White Sox that have had me excited. You know, I've watched a lot of rookies make their major league debut. You know, we've talked a lot. We've shared the videos with you of them getting the news from Sergio Santos, mostly down in AAA Charlotte, giving them the news, hey, you've worked hard for this. Your lifelong dream is coming true. You're going to make your big league debut. A lot of that was happening early in the season, and it was fun oftentimes to see a lot of these players come up here and hold their own. Now, they weren't necessarily making an impact immediately out of the gate, but they were certainly holding their own. I think what we've seen now over the last couple of months here in the second half of the season, and specifically over this last week, is all of these young players for the White Sox truly look like they can be impact players. And all of a sudden, you can start to envision the idea of the White Sox being competitive, being a 500 baseball team next year. Can they avoid a third straight season with 100 losses? That seemed like a ridiculous notion at the start of the second half, right? But now the White Sox in the second half are 22-23 after, again, having won six games in a row. And so now they're on the season, they are 53-88, which means if they win 10 more games, they will avoid a third straight 100-loss season. Something to shoot for, right? It gives the White Sox young players a little bit of a target here down the stretch to close out the season, and I think that's something that Will Venable can be preaching inside the clubhouse. It can be a rallying cry for this young team. Hey, we're not going to lose 100 games. I think it's certainly within reach now. Again, they close out the season, 10-11, and there you go. Your final 21 games go 10-11, and you avoid a 100-loss season. That would be, I think, a nice little achievement for this team and these young players that have really been extraordinary here over the last week. So it's been a fantastic week. Again, six straight wins for the White Sox, all in comeback fashion. Today, though, it might be their toughest task since this streak began, because on the mound for the Tigers today, it will be Tarek Skubal, the reigning Cy Young Award winner, who is also very likely on the verge of winning his second straight Cy Young. That is something that has not been done in a minute in the American League. We'll get into that a little bit later in White Sox Weekly. I do want to mention Josh Nelson of Sox Machine is going to be hopping on at 3 o'clock. Going to ask him a lot about what he thinks about what went down this last week. I know Josh sent out a tweet on X yesterday asking the question, okay, what would an extension for Colson Montgomery look like? I want to bat that around with him because obviously a lot of White Sox fans are very excited about what he's doing. So that's something that I'm going to ask Josh about. He posed the question. I'm going to pose it right back at him when he hops on at 3 o'clock. Again, I mentioned we'll let you hear from Ryan Fuller as well. And coming up next, we're going to relive some of the magical highlights from this past week as the White Sox won six straight games for the first time in franchise history in comeback fashion, each one of them. We'll do that next right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Clicking up dollar, 2 p.m. weekdays, ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly. Josh Nelson of Sox Machine is going to be joining me in a little over 10 minutes from now at the top of the hour at 3 o'clock, and we'll talk all things White Sox. Of course, though, it has been a fantastic week, six straight wins in comeback fashion. Sox fans, join us this Tuesday, September 9th, for CHSN Nights. The first 10,000 fans will receive a co-branded shirt. Plus, watch Montgomery, Mydroth, Teal, Caro, take your pick. They'll take on baseball's best only on Chicago Sports Network. Sign up for your 7-day free trial and stream Sox Now. Chicago Sports Network, where Chicago comes first. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/CHSN. All right, let's relive some of the great moments from this past week as heard here on the White Sox Radio Network.
Don't call it a comeback.
Montgomery smokes one in the air out into deep center field. Off the top of the wall, Montgomery around second on his way to third,
is a triple. The question is, did it get beyond that yellow line? So it is a home run for Montgomery, and we are tied at two. Swinging a fly ball, well hit out of the center field. Grisham showing back, still back. She's gone! Sox lead 3-2 in the eighth. Here it comes. Got it, lucky! A perfect sinker on the inside corner. And the Sox beat the Yankees 3-2.
Boy, what a pitch. What a location.
So the Sox win a one-run nail-biter. And they end a five-game skid.
Baldwin batting left-handed. Swings, hits a fly ball out into right center field. It's going to split the gap. Off the wall. Ramos scores. It's a double for Baldwin. We're tied at five. Swinging a blast out into right center. This is deep. And it'll get to the wall. Baldwin will score, and it's 6-5. Swinging a base hit to left. Montgomery scores. Meade's going to be held by Justin Jerschle at third. It's 4-3 Sox. Swinging a pop-up out in the shallow right. It's a base hit. Lee's going to score. Benintendi to third. It's a one-run game. Brooks Baldwin with an RBI single. A swing and a drive toward the corner and left. It is a fair ball. Two runs are going to score. Taylor on his way to second. He's got a double. 4-3 Sox lead.
Well, here's Jeffers. He's been dangerous. And he hits a ground ball to third. Meade picks it up. He throws to first.
Sox win. There's a swing and a blast. Deep right. It is gone. He hit that one up into the plaza. And we're tied. A three-run homer for Kyle Teal.
Pitch. A swing and a pop fly. This one out into center. Altman under it. He makes a catch. Sosa tags. He will score.
Love it. You asked for it, you got it.
Yep, it was deep enough. And it's 8-7.
Play right on top of home plate. Will Robertson with a base hit to right. Here comes Montgomery around third. Harris drops the ball. Robertson on his way to second, and the ball hits him on the throw. And the Sox lead again, 3-2. Here comes a 3-2. A swing and a bouncer toward short. Picked up by McKinstry. They'll get the out at second, but that is all. A run scores. 1-1. Hit in the air out into right center, and it's deep. Perez back, and it is gone. It hit the back wall. It's a home run. They've got the lead again, 5-4. Swinging a fly ball. Well hit out of the left. Benintendi's back. He's on the track. He makes a catch. And the Sox win it. That's six in a row. Another comeback win.
Don't call it a comeback. Just call it White Sox baseball these days. And that's the way they win. They spot the opposition a lead and challenge themselves to come back and win it. And that has been working for them. They've done so six straight times for the first time in the history of the White Sox organization, which, of course, it is a rich history. 125 years we are celebrating this year. So that's a lot of baseball and a lot of games being played without ever having done that. So pretty cool week for the White Sox. Listen, I'm telling you right now, Brendan Riley, listen, if you, the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, I can host White Sox Weekly each and every week if they're going to just win games. That is not a problem, folks. No losses. Sign me up. That's the best type of White Sox Weekly, right? 6-0, six straight games coming back to win. And by the way, really quickly, before I take a quick timeout, and we'll bring in Josh Nelson of Sox Machine into the conversation. But if you remember, back on Saturday night last week, the White Sox came within inches of actually starting a comeback streak a game earlier. Because remember, Lenin Sosa in the 10th inning basically had what could have been a walk-off winner against the Yankees. And it landed mere inches foul down the right field line. And had that landed fair, the White Sox actually would have won that game in come-from-behind fashion. Which, now obviously things change and there's certainly a chance that the butterfly effect, who knows if they would have gone on to win six straight had they won last Saturday. But I'm just saying, they came within inches of winning another game with a walk-off win in our in comeback fashion last Saturday night. But again, I'll take six in a row, and in the fashion that in the exciting way that the White Sox have done it, it has been absolutely magical this week, and it's got a lot of White Sox fans very excited. A lot of White Sox fans texting me all of a sudden over the last week who I haven't heard from in some time. So pretty cool to see. Hey, White Sox fans, the 2026 schedule is out. The future is bright on the South Side. Secure your spot with a 2026 plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, including Cubs, Dodgers, and Yankees, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, April 2nd against the Blue Jays. To secure your spot and view the full schedule, visit WhiteSox.com/2026. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. White Sox going for their seventh straight win tonight, and it is going to be difficult because it will be up against Tarek Skubal of the Detroit Tigers, who is probably in line, all things considered, to win his second straight Cy Young Award. So he's 12-4 with a 2.18 ERA. But never fear, White Sox fans, because Martin Perez, he's on the mound for the White Sox tonight, and he brings a lower ERA to this game with a 2.16. So even though it's going to be a tough matchup, it's not impossible. And boy, wouldn't it be cool for the White Sox to, like, you know, trail 1-0 and then come back and win it 2-1. Sign me up for that. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Before we take a quick timeout, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
All right, we'll take a quick timeout, and when we come back, we'll bring Josh Nelson of the Sox Machine in to talk about the fabulous week up, and I say on the road for the Southsiders, as they have won six in a row. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago.
Jeff Meller back on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network every Saturday. White Sox Weekly, 2 hours prior to our pregame coverage. Tonight, White Sox and Tigers get going at 5:10 with 4:30 official pregame coverage beginning. But as I always say, it's just extended White Sox pregame coverage on White Sox Weekly during the season. And it is my pleasure this afternoon to bring in Josh Nelson of the Sox Machine. Does great work along with Jim Margulis and James Fegan. They have great breakdown of the White Sox all season long and into the offseason as well. If you're a diehard Sox fan, there's no reason you shouldn't already be a subscriber to their fabulous work. But in case you're not, I'm just letting you know, Josh Nelson joins me now. Josh, real quick before we get into the White Sox and roll up our sleeves, I saw you have a watch party going on today. Now, not that I would ever tell someone that watching the White Sox is more enjoyable than listening to them. However, if someone's actually in the mood to watch a baseball game and do so with a bunch of White Sox fans in attendance, how can they hang out with you today?
Yeah, we are at the Remova Theater, so off of 35th and Halsted, which you haven't gotten a chance to visit the Remova Theater. The brewery's open. We're going to be up in the loft. We got the big screen on. Gene Honda, Jeff, has a beer with Remova. So if you're in Bridgeport and you want to hang out with other White Sox fans, we'll be watching tonight's White Sox-Tigers game at Remova.
And I would say there's going to have to be a lot of enthusiasm because 6-0, six straight comeback wins. And as I mentioned to start the show, Josh, the fashion in which they've been doing it now with both Luis Robert and Miguel Vargas on the injured list, to watch the young players who we're all hoping are kind of the core of the future to kind of lead this revolution this past week, that's been really exciting.
It has been. Would it surprise you if I told you, Jeff, that the Chicago White Sox and Detroit Tigers have the same record since the All-Star break?
It would surprise me if I didn't know that. But yes, when I did see that the other day, it was kind of like, hey, if you could just hit a reset button on the first half and just play it out from the second half, who knows where the White Sox would be. But, you know, it's part of the reason why it is encouraging right now to look forward and kind of take a look at what the 2026 season could hold. I'm really, you know, it's completely arbitrary, Josh. I mentioned it at the outset, but I'm really hoping that Will Venable is using the line of, hey, let's not lose 100 games for this franchise for a third straight season. They simply need to go 10-11 in their final 21 games. Certainly achievable with what we've seen. I mean, it might be hollow, but I think it's something to give this team to shoot for down the stretch here. And, you know, it's a real tangible goal that I think could be meaningful.
Yes, and it's the offense. Because last time you and I chatted, we felt a little bit more optimism that the White Sox can turn this franchise around because of how well they were pitching before the All-Star break. Yes, the pitchers have ran out of gas. However, Shane Smith has really picked it up in his last 8 starts. What a tough outing. What a gritty outing that Shane was able to provide last night, especially after the collision with Kyle Teal. Martin Perez has been great coming back off the injured list. He's got a tough assignment tonight, but he's been great for the White Sox in his last few starts. But this offense entering the All-Star break was only averaging 3.42 runs per game. That was one of the lowest in Major League Baseball. They had a team OPS of 638, Jeff. That was worst in Major League Baseball. Since Pittsburgh and since Colson Montgomery has got a hold of a torpedo bat, the White Sox team OPS is 775. That's seventh in Major League Baseball. They're averaging 5.42 runs per game. They've increased their run production on average by 2 runs. That is crazy in the best way possible. And if you're a White Sox fan entering this offseason now wondering, am I having too much hope? Is this too much optimism? Because at the end of the day, they may only win 62 or 63 games. Their expected win-loss record should be 9 or 10 more wins than they have right now. And I think everyone's talked about the struggles in one-run games, especially early this season when the bullpen was trying to find their footing. I'm curious, Jeff, when we go into the GM meetings in November in Vegas and the winter meetings in Orlando in December, I'm curious on how Chris Getz views this season, because Matt says if the White Sox should have been a 70-win team in 2025, is that your launch point in the decisions that you make in the offseason? Because if it is, and you can find a way to add key players to your roster to try to gain 5-10 more wins, on paper, we could be talking about the 2026 White Sox being a 75-80-win team. And all of a sudden, the conversation changes quickly from, instead of just being in the dumpster in the American League Central, the rebuilding White Sox could be a dark horse contender in 2026, largely because all these young players are hitting so well. And they're doing this, as you mentioned, without Miguel Vargas and Luis Robert.
Yeah, no, it's a great point, Josh. Josh Nelson of Sox Machine joining me. And just real quick to add a nugget to your Colson Montgomery fact, he's just the fourth player in White Sox history to hit 18-plus home runs over a 37-game span, joining Jim Thome, Frank Thomas, and Albert Bell. That's some pretty impressive company, I'd say.
Guys, Albert Bell had 49 homers with the White Sox. That's still the franchise leader. Thome, you know, and Thomas, Hall of Famers, you know, high bar. we'll see if Montgomery hits it. But, yeah, it's just what a crazy run that he's been on. And it gives you an opportunity to dream. And, you know, we were just wondering at the beginning part of the season when Montgomery is struggling in Charlotte, like, what is going on? But ever since he's joined the White Sox, it's been a revelation and really exciting now, especially with how well Teal's been hitting and Caro's been hitting. It's a fun time to be a White Sox fan, even though other fan bases may point at the White Sox final record and say, you guys still almost lost 100 games. The fact that the White Sox are going to win 19 to 20 more games than last year is a huge boost.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see how they finish out the remainder of the season because, again, I'll look at the second half. And, you know, I point to the second half specifically. You talked about all the numbers, how drastically they've improved the power numbers in the second half, the runs that they've scored offensively. And there's something tangible we can point to because it's not just Will Venable, but the entire coaching staff, Chris Getz. I know the White Sox front office. I know James Fegan's always there with me. You know, he's on the road. I'm there with him at Rate Field when everybody's meeting the media. And it was a point of emphasis by the entire White Sox organization that they needed to do a better job doing damage with fastballs early in counts. And, you know, there's a reason why they have taken that mantra and they have put it into action. And along with all these younger players, I think just the ability to get comfortable at the major league level, that in conjunction with this new team-wide approach, I think there's something where I can point to it and say, I think they're definitely a much better team in the second half of the season, and it's not fluky. You pointed to the run differential being a reason why the record probably should be better than it actually is. So, yeah, maybe I'm being a Sox homer a little bit here, but I do think there's some reasons to be excited. And, you know, I love your point about, hey, it may cause Chris Getz to consider what the possibilities are next season, especially in the winter. So that's it's a lot better than I thought it would be entering this year. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Jeff, we're talking about good problems to have, right? We're having conversations of like, what do you do with Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro? They play the same position. They're both hitting well. Like, yes, it may not be ideal to have both of your catchers in the lineup at the same time, but they're both better than league average hitters. Yeah. That's a good problem to have. Remember all the problems we were talking about after last season? This is way more fun to talk about the White Sox than the problems we were talking about last year. So it's great that all these young players are clicking for the White Sox, especially in the post-All-Star break. And it does invite difficult conversations, but they're only difficult conversations if the White Sox, on their game plan or their 3 to 5 year plan, if all of a sudden they have to bump things up a year because they may be ready to contend earlier than expected, I view that as a good problem to have. And that's why I'm curious on how Chris Getz views as far as the season at his end of the year press conference and the conversations he has with agents in Vegas and Orlando during the winter. Maybe the White Sox do surprise us and they do invest more into the player payroll, whether that's either free agent signings or trades, and decide to put more chips in the middle and try to contend in 2026.
Josh Nelson of the Sox Machine joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Josh, I'm thinking here, and I don't know, initially when the White Sox held on to Luis Robert at the trade deadline, I was always an advocate of, you know what, $20 million team option. He's playing gold glove caliber center field. Maybe it's not exactly the bat that you were hoping for. But at the same time, you know, I'm still under the philosophy that rarely is there a bad 1 year contract in sports. You know, so I was always, hey, if you didn't hear what you wanted to in terms of return for Luis Robert, then I'm perfectly fine moving forward and picking up the option the next season and rolling the dice and seeing what happens. The one thing I'll say is I do wonder, how do you feel about that? And has the way they've played over the last couple of weeks with Luis Robert on the injured list in any way changed your outlook about how they should approach potentially picking up his option or declining it in the offseason?
Before the trade deadline, I thought the White Sox had to trade Luis Robert because it just felt like he was a change of scenery candidate, that it was best for all parties involved to move on and the White Sox get whatever they can, because with how poorly he was hitting entering the All-Star break, $20 million was just too steep of a price. But Chris Getz pointed to the numbers were improving, and they were improving in August before, unfortunately, Robert suffered that hamstring strain. You're seeing national reporters quote anonymously from other MLB executives that they think that it's unfathomable. I think that's what Bob Nightingale wrote in USA Today, that other teams think that the White Sox are going to be picking up that $20 million club option for Luis Robert. With all these young players clicking, and even James Fegan wrote about it for us on SoxMachine.com, that Robert's attitude and perspective on what was going on with the White Sox organization has changed as well. And if you can have a motivated Luis Robert, he still runs the bases incredibly well. Yep. He's been playing outstanding defense in center field for the White Sox. If he's your sixth best hitter and he's hitting 280 and he's stealing 30 bags for you, and maybe he's more of a 15 to 20 homer guy than what we dreamt of being 30 or 40 homers, that's incredibly valuable to the White Sox. That's another two war player that's on your roster. And for everyone listening, we all do this in corporate America, creative accounting. It's only a $5 million pay raise for Luis Robert if you bring him back. So if there's ways that you can manipulate your payroll and you just ask for $5 million to keep Luis Robert around instead of paying him $2 million to go away, I think it's affordable in that sense for the White Sox to bring back Luis Robert and see what happens. And if he does bounce back in the first half, and if we're wrong and our optimism is misplaced and the White Sox are still struggling to win games, you can try to trade him again during the trade deadline next season. But if he clicks and if this is all real with the White Sox run production, Luis Robert's the type of player that you would be trying to trade for, Jeff, at the trade deadline to help you win the division. So my mind has changed. Chris gets you sold me. Congratulations. I think it is best for the White Sox to keep Robert and see what at least happens in the first half.
I thought it was interesting. You put it out there. It's something that I was batting around with Brendan Riley, the executive producer of White Sox Baseball. Colson Montgomery, a long-term extension. Should Chris Getz and the White Sox have conversations with him in the winter, as and you know, next usually right during spring training, oftentimes that's when you will see young players sign extensions to buy out their arbiters, and then usually have a couple options on the back end. We saw the Red Sox do it with Roman Anthony. We saw the Orioles do it with Samuel Becerra. So, you know, and this has obviously been something that happens in baseball. Now, Colson Montgomery has proven himself. He's had the opportunity now in a 51 game span to show what he's capable of, and obviously there you would certainly think that a young player can also improve upon that, but we also have to consider the realism that sometimes, you know, the league will adjust to the player as well. Now, Colson Montgomery has been worth 2.6 wins above replacement so far this season, which is a pretty staggering number for a player who has a sub 300 on base percentage. You threw the question out there last night, I saw. I'm curious what your thoughts are about how the White Sox should approach Colson Montgomery and what you think would be in the neighborhood of a good deal for both Colson and the White Sox.
If I was part of Chris Getz's front office team, I would be advising Getz that we need to meet with the Bledsoe agency in Nashville, Tennessee in October to start this conversation. Because what you want to do from a White Sox perspective over the next five seasons and the benefit to Colson Montgomery is to work out to buy out and give him a pay raise when his league minimums are coming up. That's a benefit for Colson Montgomery to sign an extension, but keep the arbitration costs controlled. Let's say Colson Montgomery is Corey Seager 2.0. I would feel awful for Chris Getz entering those arb years, Jeff, because the arbitration system highly values players that hit home runs and drive in RBIs. The arbitration system doesn't care about OPS plus or WAR. That uses the basic stats that we've been using for years, and it would favor Colson Montgomery, and it would be very hard to budget what that number is because it can increase greatly. As we've seen with players like Juan Soto and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., arbitration could award them $30 million for a particular season. So that's kind of how I'd view it, is over the next 5 years. Like Roman Anthony with his deal with the Red Sox, over the next 5 years, buying out his rookie seasons, his league minimum years, and his arbitration years, he's making $48 million with the Boston Red Sox over the next 5 years. That's the target number I would go with Colson Montgomery. It's those first 2 years of free agency that would require some negotiation and how much risk that the Chicago White Sox want to take on. That's year six, year seven of control right now for Colson Montgomery from a White Sox perspective. And I already can hear White Sox fans. Yes, this is what they did in the previous rebuild with Tim Anderson and Eloy Jimenez and Yoan Moncada. The thought process wasn't wrong. What just didn't work out is that those guys could not stay healthy. If you are optimistic about Colson Montgomery, Chris Getz, and you think he can be Corey Seager, let me remind you, Corey Seager signed for $250 million when he signed as a free agent.
Yeah.
So someone of the caliber of Colson Montgomery could be out of your price range later in the future. So that's why I would start this conversation now of how can we give Colson Montgomery a pay raise in the next couple of years, but ensure that he's with us beyond year five of his tenure with the Chicago White Sox.
Well, and not just Colson, but, you know, depending on how he finishes out the season, Kyle Teal might be someone you want to have the same conversation with, the way he has really found his groove over, you know, the second half of the season as well. He has really seemed to unlock basically what he was doing in Charlotte. He is now doing at the major league level, which is very exciting. Josh, always appreciate your time. Real quick again, if anybody wants to hang out with you today at a White Sox watch party, what do they have to do?
Yeah, 35th and Halstead, the big Remova sign, just enter through. As far as the bar area, we are upstairs at the Remova loft on the second floor. And, yeah, stop on by if you're in Bridgeport.
Great stuff, Josh. Always appreciate it. We will be reading and listening to the Sox Machine. Thanks, man. That is, again, Josh Nelson of the Sox Machine. Does great work along with Jim Margulis and James Fegan. Great read, great podcast. So check them out, Sox fans. Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil, starting at just $19. Each family member gets one ticket, one hot dog, a drink, a bag of chips, cookie, and a souvenir 125th anniversary water bottle. That includes all your fees. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. When we come back, I do have a White Sox lineup for you as we get set for White Sox and Tigers right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The Sox on your phone, the ESPN Chicago app.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly as we get set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Tigers. White Sox took the opener last night. Another comeback win for the White Sox, their 6th straight, the first time in franchise history that they have ever done that. So it's been a fun week for the White Sox, and they will square off against Tarek Skubal, the reigning Cy Young Award winner, later today. First pitch coming your way at 5:10. Martin Perez, who has been excellent for the White Sox this year, whenever he's been out there, of course, he did miss almost 4 months with an elbow injury, but was able to avoid surgery. Remember, there was some initial fear that he might have to have Tommy John surgery, but that was not the case. Martin rehabbed, got better, and each and every time he's been out there pitching for the White Sox since he returned, he has given them a good opportunity to win baseball games, and he will have a tough task today as he will be squaring off against Tarek Skubal again, who is 12-4 with a 2.18 ERA. Skubal has 216 strikeouts in 173 innings. So he is dominant. The White Sox are going to have to do their best to keep the score low today, in all likelihood, if they're going to be able to win a 7th straight game. Should be entertaining theater that you can hear right here on ESPN 1000, the home of the Chicago White Sox. Lineup today, it'll be Chase Meidroth playing second base and leading off. Edgar Caro does the catching. He will be batting second. Lenin Sosa plays first base, and he'll bat third. He leads the team in home runs with 19. Colson Montgomery, the lefty shortstop, who, as we mentioned, has 18 home runs in his last 37 games. He'll clean up. Curtis Meade DHs and bats fifth today. Brian Ramos will man the hot corner and bat sixth. Michael A. Taylor in center field hits seventh. Brooks Baldwin, the switch-hitting left fielder, will bat eighth. And then Dominic Fletcher is in right field. The lefty hits ninth for the White Sox today. No Kyle Teal, but of course the lefty catcher slash DH. I think he's getting the day off with the tough matchup against Tarek Skubal. Makes a little bit of sense, and he'll be available off the bench if Will Venable needs a pinch hitter late, especially against a potential righty out of the pen. That would make all the sense in the world to have Kyle Teal available to you there. So that is the White Sox lineup today. Some sad news from around baseball. Earlier today, got word that the 2-time World Series champion Davey Johnson, who managed the 1986 World Series champion Mets, died at the age of 82. So sad news there. He was a 3-time All-Star during his playing days with the Orioles from 1965 through 72. He won 3 Gold Glove Awards, and he was part of 4 AL pennant winners and 2 World Series champions back in 1966 and 1970. Again, the Baltimore Orioles winning it that year. And then he, of course, managed the Mets from 1984 through 1990, and he led them to 5 consecutive 90-win seasons. And, of course, the highlight was that 1986 season when the Mets won 108 games in the regular season and the World Series that year, of course, fueled by greats like Daryl Strawberry, Doc Gooden, David Cohn, Sid Fernandez, lots of great Mets players, Howard Johnson, Lenny Dykstra, Mookie Wilson, and of course that Mets team went on to beat the 1986 Boston Red Sox, which of course that famous Bill Buckner between the legs play has gone down in the annals of history as one of the most memorable moments in Major League playoff history. So Davey Johnson, the manager of that 86 Mets team and a multiple All-Star player and two-time World Series winner for the Orioles, has died at the age of 82. So some sad news there to relay to you. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. When we come back, Colson Montgomery has been a conversation piece now for a while because of how well he has done since the start of the second half, and in particular since he picked up a torpedo bat way back when the White Sox were playing the Rays in that second series out of the All-Star break. And Ryan Fuller, who worked individually with Colson Montgomery to get his swing right back in early May when Colson Montgomery left Charlotte. He was in AAA, and it was going so poorly for him that the White Sox decided organizationally that it was best for him to take some time away, go work with Ryan Fuller individually in Arizona to completely rework his swing. And my, oh my, the results have been absolutely extraordinary as Colson Montgomery has now finally debuted for the White Sox back on July 4th, and the All-Star break hit. And then after 14 games, all of a sudden, Colson Montgomery has unlocked that sweet lefty power swing, and he is making, I think, a lot of White Sox fans contemplate what the future holds for this rookie phenom. So Ryan Fuller talked with the media, and we'll let you hear what he had to say, not just about Colson Montgomery, but about a lot of the White Sox hitters who, you know, Josh Nelson and I just talked about how this offense has really re-energized the team. So Ryan Fuller, integral in kind of reworking a lot of what the White Sox have done offensively. We'll let you hear some of the stuff he had to say to the media this past week right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Back on White Sox Weekly as we lead you up to our official pregame coverage, which starts at 4:30. White Sox and Tigers first pitch coming your way at 5:10 as the White Sox have won six straight games, and they have won each one in comeback fashion. Pretty fun week to be a White Sox fan. Join us September 20th for Sox Crawl, halfway to St. Pat's Day, presented by Miller Lite. Enjoy a pregame crawl inside the stadium with happy hour specials on classic ballpark food and drink, entertainment, and more. Plus, receive a White Sox hockey jersey and an Irish tweed hat. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/SoxCrawl. All right, so as I mentioned, Ryan Fuller, who is the White Sox director of hitting, met with the media last Sunday and talked a lot about what he's been able to do with a lot of the White Sox younger hitters. And not just, I will, because you'll hear it from Ryan Fuller here, not just the younger players, but the veterans too. A lot of times we just assume that they're finished products, but that is not always the case. They're looking to get better. You'll hear Ryan Fuller talk about that here. But he started out talking about what he has been focused on with some of the White Sox minor league players, how they've seen so many of them come through the minors now this season, debut at the major league level. What he has implemented, has he seen it follow through to the majors?
Yeah, obviously we're up in the big leagues right now, and right, you look at the post All-Star break performance, and that's been a collective effort with Will, Marcus, Joel, the front office of what we wanted to value, and you're seeing really good progress with those guys too. And it's not just the runs that we're putting up, it's also our swing decisions are improving. Earlier in the year, we were missing a lot of fastballs over the heart of the plate. We're putting those in play now, and when we are, it's hard line drive. So those are the three things we really value: good swing decisions, hard contact on a line. You're seeing that a lot more, and then you're looking at the performances in the minor leagues too, and we're seeing a lot more of that too. Our organizational OPS has jumped up a good amount year over year, so a lot of things to be proud of, but also a lot of work still to be done.
I think Grady was saying yesterday about you guys have had a lot of tough at-bats. Like, even in situations where the game might be out of reach, no one's kind of mailing it in. It's the approach is staying the same. I'm sorry.
It's really fun to come up here and then to get feedback from Will, Walker, Marcus, and Joel, and you're hearing from opposing clubs that the at-bats are different. You guys are really tough at-bats. We're having a game plan a lot differently for you guys this year, and that's a really fun thing to look at this lineup, too, because it's not a bunch of veterans. We have veterans mixed with a lot of young guys who have inexperience at the big league level, and to put up consistent quality at-bats on a daily basis is really something to be proud of.
You talked about there being more work to do. What is kind of the next phase of improving offense overall look like to you moving forward in the next year?
Yeah, when you look at where we were last year in almost every category, it's the bottom third, and we're making meaningful progress, but we want to be top five. We want to be one of the best, and obviously there's always work to be done to get there, but to move the needle and a lot of the things we value year over year, 1 year, especially the first year of implementing a new system, is really encouraging. But yeah, more work to be done. I'm not going to be satisfied until we're the best at the things we value.
How much of that work is just growth by some of these young players? Some natural growth as they get used to the league and this level?
That's a huge part of it. And you look at Kyle Teal, Chase Mindrop, they're getting significant time at the big league level. You learn lessons when you're up here. Colson coming up. I mean, we're seeing the home runs, the high exit velos, really exciting, but the conversations you're having with these guys that are so much more mature than when you first get up here. Do I belong? Oh, I got to get a hit tonight. I want to impress so I can stay up here. Don't want to go back. These guys now are coming into the cage every day of how do we beat the pitcher out there? So it's more of a team effort. So the maturity from a personality standpoint rather than just the talent on the field has been really impressive.
I'm sure with a new organization, you've got a certain amount of time where you had to get your arms around what's here already. At what point did you feel like you had that kind of sense? Or were there surprises once you kind of understood, okay, here's what we got, here's what we've got?
Got hired in November of last year, and I felt that really immediately. Honestly, the connection to Chris, Josh Barfield, Will, once he was hired, and then establishing relationships with the big league staff, the minor league people, it was clear that things were already in place, that we're valuing the right things, and then how do we scale this across the system, and how do we amplify what we're talking about in terms of scoring runs, increasing our OPS, really valuing the skills that scale at the big league level. So it's been a lot of fun, but it's been support, good relationships, and definitely a good fit from the beginning.
What has it been like for you to see Colson come up here and have some success, you know, considering, you know, the work you guys did earlier in the season?
I go back to the end of April when that decision was made to send him to Arizona. Fast forward to now, obviously, it looks like a really great decision, but there's a lot of people that were involved with that process outside of me. Our AAA coach did a great job of carrying out the plan, but most importantly, Colson is the guy. You see him up here. There's true belief that he is a big league, game-changing player. So the maturity swing-wise, I think you can go back and look what he was doing in April, how much better he's moving now, the pitches he's able to cover, velocity, breaking balls, the personality. You're seeing him really enjoy this stage. It's been really fun to watch. So, yeah, looking at it from where he was to where he is now is a whole lot of fun, but a ton of credit to him.
When you were having dinner over at Yard House in Westgate or wherever you guys went to, did you sense it was still there? Did you sense he was kind of beaten down at all? Because it would be understandable for a guy who was that highly touted and then go through basically a year and a half of struggles to maybe, you know, get worn down a little bit. Or did you sense he was just waiting to kind of take off?
No, when you struggle, I mean, the great part about Colson is he's aware of things around him. He knew that this is not what my stat line in AAA is supposed to look like in order to get to the big league. So real conversations, but it was always the belief of, man, like, once I get there, like, I know I'm going to belong. So you look to what he did when he came up here, and it was a couple of home runs early. He proved it to himself quickly that this is a level I can compete at and excel at. So those conversations, obviously, looking back, were really good ones to have in the moment, and he was feeling down, but it was always a belief that once I get here, I know what it's going to look like.
If you see with the, you know, improvements, you know, whether it's just be a better, just his work, and maybe his swing back more compact, if you see it leading into improved swing decisions with, you know, the changeups and the back foot breaking balls and being attacked with.
We have a lot of options here, and the great part with Colson is, I think Pete gave you guys an unbelievable quote of, like, get feedback from the game, make adjustments, go boom, whatever that quote was. But that, to me, exemplifies him learning at the big league level that it's not just, okay, this is my process, I have to do it over and over again. I'm smart. If they're challenging me in a part of the zone that I haven't been covering, like, I have to work on that in the cage. And to torpedo that, go back to the Rays series when he implemented it, he was getting worn out, up and in the zone, feeling like his swing was getting a little around. The torpedo moves the kick point and the swing down a little bit where he can turn and cover those balls on the inner half more. So he's a really smart guy. He wants feedbacks. He's making adjustments.
Fans can be thrilled about what they see right here, the home runs, obviously, but what, how much more can he do? What more is he going to grow? Obviously, this is just his first taste of the big leagues.
We're seeing the game-changing power, and that's obviously, when you look at the Yankees, that's what really good teams do. With one swing of the bat, you're changing the score. But you look at Colson, there's those three values that we have of swing decisions, contact, and then damage, too. And throughout his minor league career, he was always walking at a really good clip, making good decisions, swinging when he should take, when he should take. So I see him being a guy where it's really good decisions, really big damage, and then contact when he needs it. So looking at him to continue to make jumps, but we're seeing a really loud skill that's one of the most valuable at the big league level.
How similar do you feel the adjustment Edgar Caro's making with his left-hand swing to, feel like he's drawing his hands too down and not being competitive against
him? Hey, Bobby!
Do you feel like he's making a similar pass adjustment to Colson with what the trivia bets allow him to do?
Looking at Q and his numbers, I mean, it's really encouraging. 2 days ago, his hard hit rate was about 48%, which is well above major league average, and that's one of the things. His contact quality is so good. How do we now use that, not just opposite field, but when they're challenging you and be able to hit a line drive to the pull side as well? But his work in the cage has been really targeted of being on time, being able to hit hard line drives. And for a guy, again, switch hitter, first year in the big leagues, to be able to showcase that ability to make contact where it's hard as well, impressive.
Do you see at this point from Tim Elko, who's had an all-star year at AAA Charlotte, had some moments here, but still has probably a little bit too much swing and miss maybe for your guys' life?
Yeah, you look at the path of each guy at the big league level, and we're just talking about Colson where he comes up and he has success immediately. A lot of other guys where there's a period where you're finding your footing up here, and that's a part of the belief of Tim Elko belongs up here. He has really loud skills, and we've seen it at the AAA level, and now it's have the belief of what you did in AAA is going to translate over here. We're certainly going to make some adjustments, but when he is relaxed, his time is on time, special player. We saw it when, you know, they're playing the Marlins and he has a couple home runs, game-changing ability on there too. So looking forward, the more time he has up here, get more comfortable, trust yourself even more, and then the only thought when you get into the box is it's me versus the pitcher, just like it was in AAA.
You mentioned Kyle Tillador earlier. What stood out to you about his approach?
Yeah, Kyle Teal is fearless. He's going up there trying to do damage every swing. The nice part about him is there's no sacrifice. It's on pitches in the zone. He can handle quality contact and then the ability to go pull the ball too. I mean, we've seen him hit line drives all over the field, but his conviction and I'm going up there and I feel like I'm better than anybody I'm facing on the mound. It's a really nice feeling to have that confidence up there.
Chris has talked about his team being committed to Luis Robert Jr. before. What kind of gives you confidence that the second half version of Luis is the one that you'll see next year versus the first half version?
Obviously, you can just look at the basic stats. Way better, way more productive. He was moving really well out there. The defense he was playing in center field, but the quality at bats too. And what I love, you guys don't get to see the work he's putting in the cage. He's really understanding the pitch types that were giving him trouble and how to attack those when pitchers are going to offer those. But his work was really, really good, encouraging in there. His BP was looking better, and then the performance out there. So the talent level of Luis Robert is one of the best in the game, in my opinion. So to be able to get him back healthy, build on the work we've been doing, especially second half of the year, feeling the confidence of those results, looking forward to him having a really good 26.
I know we're up here, but how would you analyze Braden Montgomery's first professional season?
got to be with him last week in Birmingham, so got a really good look. He's special. It's what we talked about with Colson, the damage ability, the ability to change the game with one swing. He is up there with anybody in the minor leagues right now, and he's going to have a really good skill set. This is his first year of professional baseball. We can't forget that. He's jumped through Kannapolis, Winston. He's in Birmingham. They're going to try and win a championship here in the next couple of weeks. But that experience alone, three levels, producing at each one, he can nitpick going through. But this is a really productive player who's going to make adjustments, and we're going to see those three skills. Obviously, damage is one, but the contact's going to improve. Really good swing decisions. He's going to be one that's going to be really fun to watch.
What's the thought process for him in the AFL? Just more bats, just more experience out there?
The first one is win a championship. That Birmingham club is so fun right now, and the atmosphere there is one of a big league club trying to win a championship. So that sense of not just it's me, my first year of pro ball, trying to put up numbers, it's not me being a contributing member of a winning team, and then go to Arizona, and hopefully that momentum feels the same, where we're going out here, we're trying to win together, but also I'm still working at my skills. He's developed a really good routine every day, and now just going out there and continuing to ingrain that.
What does being at three levels this year kind of say about how advanced the prospect he is, and just the ability to kind of keep moving at that clip?
Each level, I mean, it's like a video game. You beat Kannapolis, you get to go to Winston. You beat Winston, you get to go to Birmingham. It's obviously still a short period of time in Birmingham. Double-A baseball is a higher level, obviously, than those two for good reason. So him going through, we have obviously targets for him, and we're tracking them, seeing the progress, and once we feel he beats that level, he goes to AAA, and that's obviously another challenge, which we've seen with a lot of other guys. But going through three levels speaks to him being competitive, dedicated to knowing the skills that scale, and yeah, excited to see him continue to beat levels.
So by that logic, Major League Baseball is not the final boss, is what you're saying.
That's right, and not many guys beat that boss.
What kind of strides have you seen Caleb Bonner make? He plays most of the year as a 19-year-old shortstop at Kannapolis, which is huge. But kind of a tighter athlete at the plate sometimes, but he's done a lot of damage.
Productive player, and you look at him, he's 19, but he feels like a guy who went to college. He's physical, really strong, and simple out there. What I love about him, it's really good at bats. He knows the strike zone. When he hits, there's a lot of authority behind it as well. So a guy who full year, obviously most of the year in Kannapolis, now Winston again making a playoff push right here, but that experience for him, his first full season being really productive, looking forward to carrying that momentum into next year.
The camp doesn't look drastically different, but I think for him it's probably a significant adjustment, just how smoothly or how encouragingly he handled that for, you know, 19 years.
Yeah, he's been working at it. That's the beautiful thing, and obviously he's a tighter mover. He doesn't need to have a ton of rhythm, big movements for him to get a swing off. But it has been the timing of the separation, trying not to hold positions for too long, has been really encouraging. I think he'll tell you that it's been an evolution, even though you put two swings side by side, it may not look incredibly different. But he's making progress, and he understands how his body moves really well.
Ryan Ramos probably hasn't been talked about as much this year, but he's had a quietly like strong second half, and it seems like his hands and lower body are synced up a little bit better. What have you seen with the strides he's been able to make?
Oh, yeah.
We have Hawkeye. We've talked about it before. Those feedback loops of what's happening in the game when players are at their best. We have two great biomechanics staff here. They're giving us feedback all the time. With Ramos, it's really clear. What you do at your best is you're starting early, the timing of the separation you alluded to, really good, and then he's able to make contact out in front of the plate at really strong spots versus being too deep. The ground ball rate goes up, but him having that offensive environment and Charlotte lean into that, hit balls hard in the air, and we're seeing him put together a really good second half, and I think that's a credit to the feedback loops we have in place. We're utilizing the data to make really smart swing adjustments.
How much, I guess, for older players who kind of have their own process, like Andrew Benintendi is going to specifically, like he's kind of working on his direction, but do you kind of trust him to work through on his own because he has kind of his own methodology at this point, or do you try to intervene there?
Yeah, I think that's one of the misconceptions of veteran players, that they feel like they got it all figured out and they want any help. I mean, these guys want to continue to get better, and Benny knows what really high production looks like, and asking questions, working really well with Marcus and Joel, utilizing the feedback that we have for him. So
there are things definitely to get him to be a really high OPSer, which he's been in the past. And seeing trend lines and really good runs that he goes on where you see flashes, but all these guys, how can we make you more consistent? And having those conversations with the guys is really fun, and not just the young guys looking for coaching, but the older guys too looking to gain an edge.
In general, is there a prime reason to find ways to have success with runners in scoring position?
Runner in scoring position, obviously, 1 year you look at a team, they could be first. The next year they could be 20th. There's a lot that goes into it. But really, how can you simplify it? A lot of these guys, when runner in scoring position, opportunities come up, it's a feeling of, I have to do this. I have to put a ball in the air. I have to make contact. That creates anxiety. How can we go back to the pillars that we have of pitcher on the mound? This is the zone we're looking in. When he puts it there, I'm going to put a good swing on the ball. Usually, when we simplify, keep the process the same that it always is in any situation, these guys feel like, that's exactly what I know what to do. I don't feel like I have to do anymore. That's usually when we're at our best.
That was White Sox director of hitting, Ryan Fuller, who had joined the organization this winter and has done, I think, a remarkable job of really finding a nice rapport with a lot of the White Sox players. And I think you're seeing in the second half now all of the work that he has done really come to fruition here at the major league level. And there's a lot to be optimistic about right now up on the South Side as the White Sox go for their seventh straight win tonight. And hey, they don't have to come from behind, but the first six have been come from behind fashion. So you love to see that. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we will also let you hear from Braden Montgomery and Tyler Schweitzer. We'll do that right here on the White Sox Radio Network.
The ESPN Chicago Triple Play, AM, FM, HD, and app.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly as we lead you up to White Sox pregame coverage, which officially begins at 4:30. White Sox and Tigers coming your way at 5:10 today, first pitch at Comerica Park, game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and the Motor City Kitties. They will conclude the series tomorrow afternoon, and then the White Sox will have a much-deserved day off. Sunday's game will wrap up 17 straight days of baseball for the White Sox, so it will be nice to get a day off, and then they will be back at Wright Field on Tuesday after the day off on Monday. The White Sox, though, and Tigers tonight, it'll be Tarek Skubal, the defending Cy Young Award winner, against Martin Perez, who actually has a lower ERA, 2.16 to Skubal's 2.18. So hopefully we're in store for, a good pitching matchup, but I'd certainly settle for just a good pitching matchup on Martin Perez's side. And then if the White Sox want to rock Tarek Skubal, by all means, you feel free, boys, although that's easier said than done, I do believe. Hey, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark on Friday, September 19th, as the White Sox take on the Padres at 6:40 and celebrate Hispanic Heritage Night presented by Modelo. The first 15,000 fans, 21 and over, will receive a Guayabero. Be sure to stay after the game for a post-game fireworks show. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. When we come back, we will do a White Sox farm report. The White Sox named Braden Montgomery their minor league player of the month. And also, there has been a really nice turnaround by a member of the White Sox pitching staff, at least for the Birmingham Barons, which I want to tell you about as well. So we're going to bring that to you. Before we take a quick timeout, though, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Minor League Report when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
At the opportunity to join your team. as someone on the spectrum,
I possess a unique set of skills
that sets me apart from other candidates.
My detail-oriented nature allows me to communicate complex ideas,
to break down data,
to have no fear in meeting new people.
I may communicate in ways that are different from what you're used to.
Structure, routine,
and clear expectation
help me do my best work.
My autism allows me to have a perspective that needs to be seen and heard.
It allows me to make the world safer and improve systems in ways others can't.
It allows me to bring people's inner worlds to life with my artwork.
My autism
will bring your team important insights.
Thank you for your consideration.
An autistic, inclusive workplace is good for business. It's time to make a change. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/win.
Scanning the globe. Charlotte, Birmingham, Kannapolis, Winston-Salem, Glendale.
Let's take a look at the White Sox stars of tomorrow. It's time to check in down on the farm. It's the White Sox Farm Report on the White Sox Audio Network.
Jeff Miller back on White Sox Weekly each and every Saturday, 2 hours prior to our pregame coverage. White Sox and Tigers this evening at 5:10. Pregame coverage starts at 4:30 on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. So, farm report here. Earlier this week, Braden Montgomery was named the White Sox Minor League Player of the Month for August, and Christian Apor was named the White Sox Minor League Pitcher of the Month for August. Montgomery was awesome in the past month. Should come as no surprise. He hit .323 with a .404 on base, a .490 slug. He had 13 doubles, a homer, 10 RBIs, 11 walks, and 12 runs scored, along with an .894 OPS over the 26 games in August. He recorded a hit in 22 of those 26 games, reached base in 23, and by the way, he had hit safely in 14 straight games for a period of time in August. It was the eighth longest in Class AA this season. Braden Montgomery talked about what has worked well for him in this last month.
Able to make it happen pitch by pitch. Like you said, everything was coming together. I don't know, just every day I try to take a little bit of a step forward, and I guess at that point I was just locked in, seeing the pitches that I needed to see, getting up there and not missing them. I feel like sometimes when things aren't going as hot, you're just kind of missing the fastball that you need to hit, or missing the ball over the middle of the plate. And so I feel like in that stretch, when I was getting the pitch that I needed to put a good swing on, I was able to make that happen.
I'll add too that what Montgomery's been able to accomplish, extremely impressive when you consider that this is the third level that he's playing at this season, as he's gone from low A to high A to double A so far in one season. That is quite the achievement for any young player. So Braden Montgomery then to be named Player of the Month for what he did in double A, that is absolutely outstanding. Another achievement for Montgomery is the fact that he will participate in the Arizona Fall League for the White Sox. He talked about that as well.
I guess going into the season, knowing that I was on whatever list and whatnot, it was on my radar that I knew it was going to be a possibility. I didn't really have any, I guess, feelings towards it. I was like, if I'll get invited, yeah, we'll go and we'll make it happen. If not, then just enjoy the full off season. But yeah, I'm just excited to play some more talent that's going to be difficult. I just wanted to prepare as much for the big leagues as possible. I want to show that that's where I want to be at, and I want to continue to get better on the road to that.
Braden Montgomery, now, he was traded by the Red Sox as part of the package in the Garrett Crochet deal. Remember, the White Sox acquired Kyle Teal, Braden Montgomery, Chase Mydroth, and Wickelman Gonzalez, the four players they got in exchange for Garrett Crochet. Now, Montgomery, who was a first-round pick for the Red Sox, did not play last season because he suffered a broken ankle. So this is his first pro season. He talked about what his first pro season has been like.
Yeah, it's been awesome. I didn't really set any expectations coming into it just because I knew it was going to be a completely new new field for me, new everything, new system and whatnot. So I just kind of came into it with an open mind, and it's been really cool. I've been enjoying it, and we're hoping to make a good run in this playoffs soon.
Yeah, well, talk about that Birmingham team. I mean, I know you just came to it not too long ago, but what's the kind of feel down there? I mean, you guys have one of the best records in professional baseball right now.
Yeah, it's been awesome. It's really cool to see all the pieces come together, because you talk about teams that are able to make a deep run in the playoffs, and it can't be a one-dimensional, like you can't just have one way to win. And so our offense is very not one-dimensional. We're able to get it done in multiple different ways, whether it's from the big swing or from the bunt and get the guy over and just offense it through stealing bases like that. It's been really cool to see. And then obviously we've got some great pieces on the mound.
One more from Braden Montgomery here in a moment, but I do want to mention, because you heard Scott Merkin with the follow-up question asking him about Birmingham and the team's success, who, remember, they won the Sally League last year, so they're actually the defending champs going for a second consecutive title. They can clinch the second half Southern League North Division title tonight with a win over Chattanooga or a Knoxville loss against Rocket City, so they've got an opportunity to clinch. They are 39-22 during the second half with a 7.5 game lead over Knoxville. So even if it doesn't necessarily happen tonight, they are certainly in good shape for the clinch of the second half title. And one more here from Montgomery talking about the White Sox organization as a whole and his overall thoughts on what his experience has been like.
Yeah, I think our organization is full of a bunch of young, really good players. I mean, a lot of those guys have made their debut this year, but we still have more guys on the way up. And so it's been super exciting just to work with these guys to see what makes them tick, to see how they work day in and day out. And it's also been cool just to have played with the guys a little bit in the past and see now where they're at compared to when we first met. So it's just been a really cool experience overall. I think it helps at least like with a sense of belonging, like with a lot of young guys there. I mean, obviously it's we've got our first taste of like having older teammates and whatnot, but I feel like the young core that's coming up is really close in age and relatable to one another, and so it's been super cool.
So that was Braden Montgomery, again, the White Sox minor league player of the month for August this past week. And I mentioned all the success that Birmingham is having. In particular, Braden Montgomery talks about all the good players they have, and he said a lot of the good players on the mound as well. One of those players on the mound who maybe wasn't necessarily on Sox fans' radar to begin the season is Tyler Schweitzer. Tyler Schweitzer, the lefty, who actually was at one point promoted to AAA Charlotte, where he struggled. He had some real issues to the point where he actually had a 7.92 ERA in 50 innings of work. Now, he actually got right a little bit near the end of his time at Charlotte, but the damage had kind of been done, and the White Sox decided that it was best for him to kind of reset and try and work on some things back in Double A. So he struggled immensely at Triple A. And then all of a sudden, a couple of weeks ago, I noticed that Tyler Schweitzer had put together a streak of over 40 straight innings without allowing a run in Double A. And I get there's always this possibility that a player is really good for one level, and then they get to the next level and they kind of, you know, find a harsh reality that, hey, you know, you're maybe not as good as you thought you were dominating that other level. But usually you don't see like such an extreme, right? You don't see a guy struggle at AAA and then all of a sudden be unhittable in AA. That's just, you know, it's not that extreme usually. So I actually reached out to my friend and your friend, Connor McKnight. You may recall him from previous White Sox Weekly episodes as the host, the guy who held the role that I currently hold now. But I reached out to Connor, who does a fantastic podcast, Road to the Rates, if you haven't checked it out, if you're a White Sox fan and you want more information on the minors. And I reached out to Connor and I said, hey, tell me what the hell's going on with Tyler Schweitzer. Why could he get nobody out in AAA earlier this year, and now nobody can get a hit off of him in AA? And so I reached out to Connor a couple weeks ago, And I said, what's going on? What do you know about Tyler Schweitzer? And he said, you know what? I don't know enough to give you an answer just yet. Let me dig into it and I'll find out and I'll get back to you. I said, perfect. Sounds good. And Connor didn't get back to me. What he did is he had Tyler Schweitzer on his podcast for an interview. And so we got some answers as to what has gone well for Tyler Schweitzer as he joined Connor McKnight on his podcast, Road to the Rates, earlier this week.
Honestly, it's being aggressive on the hitter, just getting that strike one, putting the guys on the back foot, and then you can just expand on all your pitches out there, and then also trusting those seven guys behind you. And then recently, I haven't really had to shake a lot with my catchers. So the catchers have been doing a really, really good call, pitch calling. So it's just been a nice fluid transition from everyone.
Take me through your journey a little bit through Ball State, because a lot of people, if you're not like super into the draft, guys don't know about Dre Jamison and Kyle Nicholas and Chase McDermott, who were all top five round picks before you coming out of Ball State in Muncie. What was the pitching development program like there? How were you guys instructed to go about getting hitters? You know, what was your, you know, what's the foundation for you as you get into this White Sox system a couple years back?
It's all about development, you know, getting what you need as a person, if that's getting bigger, you know, getting more mobile, like whatever physically you need to do that. Like we're focused on that. And then pitching is just attack, be on the aggressive from pitch one and then work from that. And we did a lot of good jobs with, Dustin Glant, when he recruited me, he was all about, we're going to get the velo. And then when he left, Larry Scully came in, and then he was all about command. So it was kind of a best of both worlds kind of thing of, we got bigger, we got stronger, we're throwing harder. And now we're putting it into practice of, we're throwing it in the strike zone and saying F you to the hitter, basically.
I love that. We've had Tanner McDougal on the show a couple of weeks ago, and that was very much his approach in the same way, although you held up just where Tanner kind of struggled just a little bit, so I appreciate it. I love this idea because I was just talking to, like the other day, I'm peeling back the curtain a little bit here for those of you watching. I'm in Minneapolis right now, and I sat down with Shane Smith, who's going to start the ball game on Thursday for the White Sox. And that's the mindset, man. It's like knowing that your stuff, and it's knowing that your stuff is better than this guy if I put it in the right spot. I wonder though, Tyler, like there, for all of us, there are times where we don't believe that thing we need to believe. What has it been like to get back to, you know, kind of trusting that for you? Because I know this year has had some ups and downs.
Yeah. Hindsight 2020, that was kind of, looking back when I was in Charlotte, that was kind of the mindset that I didn't quite have. It was, I would throw a ball, it would get hit, and I'm like, all right, I need to be a little bit better. And then I miss by 2 inches, and then I miss 2 inches again, and I'm down on the count. So then I throw it right down the middle, and then it gets hit again. So it was that that wavering mentality I didn't think I had, but looking back now, I definitely had that. And yeah, Birmingham is a great reset right now. You know, zero ERA in however many innings now. So I feel like it's boded pretty well.
Who have you talked with and how has it been to transition into a role that's very much like, anything you need, I'm out here to get things done? I mean, you've shut things down in leverage. You've come out in bulk innings. You've made some starts. You've had some shorter outings as well. I mean, more multi-inning kind of stuff, but you have had some shorter stuff. What does it take for you to find the mindset that works given this role?
I mean, it's whatever the team needs, really. Whatever role is acceptable, like I'll accept it. In college, I was a reliever my first 2 years, and in my second year of relief, I was everything for Ball State. Mm-hmm. The firefighter, the long relief, the setup guy, closer, like whatever you want to, every name a relief pitcher can have, that was what I was. And then going into my junior year, Coach Maloney wanted me to be a starter, but didn't know like who was going to replace my role, I guess, as a reliever. So he wanted me to stay as a reliever as well. So it was just very conflicting, but just having the mentality of going out there and
none of those hitters are going to beat me is, you know, anything is, any role is acceptable when you have that mentality.
You mentioned having a really good bond with your catchers early on. Who have you been working with for the most part? I mean, White Sox fans have, I know who's down there, but the guys have been, you know, really on key, it sounds like. How has it been to get in that mind mold and kind of understand where you guys are headed?
Yeah, I mean, our catchers down here right now are Calvin Harris, Michael Turner, who's coming off of injury, and then Jorge Corona, who came up from low A. And it's just gotten better with just talking with them and what I want to do as a pitcher and what they kind of see as a catcher, reading, you know, reading bats and where they're positioned in the box and stuff like that. And like I said, we haven't really had to shake a lot. Their pitch calling has been nails. So, I mean, just talking to them about what I want to accomplish so they know, you know, where we want to throw X amount of pitches, where to what hitters. It's been a real big plus.
That has got to feel great. Like, I don't know if you think that on the mound, cause you're, you know, in fight mode, but as you're coming off and heading back into the dugout or at some point you have to be like, God, that was great. I mean, it's just, everything was right on.
Yes. It's the best feeling when after an outing, you realize you're like, I don't think I shook. Like it's one of the greatest feelings ever. It's like, cause like sometimes when you get out of sync, you're like, no, I don't want to throw that pitch. Oh no, I don't want to throw that pitch. Like I have a sequence in my head, but that's also a good thing. Cause you talk to your catchers in between innings. Hey, let's start this guy off with a slider. Hey, let's start this guy off with a changeup. So then it kind of gets the juices flowing of just every other at bat. And it's one of the best feelings in the world.
That was Tyler Schweitzer, who has been absolutely awesome down at AA for Birmingham. He finally had his streak snapped the other day, 43 straight scoreless innings for the Barons, as he joined Connor McKnight on his podcast, Road to the Rate. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark on Sunday, September 21st, as the White Sox take on the Padres at 1:10. First 10,000 fans in attendance will receive a 1959 Comiskey Park AM-FM radio. Pretty cool giveaway. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. When we come back, we'll relive the highlights of six straight come-from-behind wins for the White Sox, first time in organization history, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Legend of Dollar, 2 p.m. weekdays, ESPN Chicago.
Hey, students, it's easier than ever to get your friends together for a White Sox game. Sign up for student pass alerts and get exclusive access to lower-level ticket offers. Text STUDENT to 244-769 to sign up or visit whitesox.com/student for more information. Let's relive the highlights from this past week. Six straight wins in come-from-behind fashion by the White Sox.
Don't call it a comeback.
Montgomery smokes one in the air out into deep center field. Off the top of the wall. Montgomery around second on his way to third. And for now, it is a triple. The question is, did it get beyond that yellow line? So it is a home run for Montgomery, and we are tied at two. Swinging a fly ball, well hit out of the center field. Grisham going back, still back. She's gone! Sox lead 3-2 in the eighth. Here it comes. Got him looking! A perfect sinker on the inside corner. And the Sox beat the Yankees 3-2. Boy, what a pitch. What a location. So the Sox win a one-run nail-biter. And they end a five-game skid. Baldwin batting left-handed. Swings, hits a fly ball out into right center field. It's going to split the gap. Off the wall. Ramos scores. It's a double for Baldwin. We're tied at five. Swinging a blast out into right center. This is deep. And it'll get to the wall. Baldwin will score, and it's 6-5. Swinging a base hit to left. Montgomery scores. Meade's going to be held by Justin Gershley at third. It's 4-3 Sox. Swinging a pop-up out in the shallow right. It's a base hit. Lee's going to score. Benintendi to third. It's a one-run game. Brooks Baldwin with an RBI single. A swing and a drive toward the corner and left. It is a fair ball. Two runs are going to score. Taylor on his way to second. He's got a double.
4-3 Sox lead. Here's Jeffers. He's been dangerous. And he hits a ground ball to third. Meade picks it up. He throws to first. Sox win. There's a swing and a blast. Deep right. It is gone. He hit that one up into the plaza. And we're tied. A three-run homer for Kyle Teal. Pitch. A swing and a pop fly. This one out into center. Altman under it. He makes a catch. Sosa tags. He will score.
Love it. You asked for it. You got it.
Yep. It was deep enough. And it's 8-7.
White right on top of home plate.
Will Robertson with a base hit to right. Here comes Montgomery around third. Harris drops the ball. Robertson on his way to second. And the ball hits him on the throw. And the Sox lead again 3-2. Here comes a 3-2. A swing and a bouncer towards short. Picked up by McKinstry. They'll get the out at second, but that is all. A run scores. 1-1. Hit in the air out into right center, and it's deep. Perez back, and it is gone. It hit the back wall. It's a home run. They've got the lead again, 5-4. Swing and a fly ball. Well hit out of the left. Benintendi's back. He's on the track. He makes a catch. And the Sox win it. That's 6 in a row. Another comeback win.
6 in a row, and they go for 7 straight tonight. It'll be against Tarik Skubal and the Tigers. Your pregame coverage starts in 5 minutes from right now. White Sox fans, there's still time to win a one-of-a-kind experience this season. Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win a 2026 suite or a game. The winner will receive a 20-person suite for a mutually agreed-upon game in 2026. Host your friends and family in luxury while cheering on the Sox. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. That's going to do it for this edition of White Sox Weekly, but stick around. We got White Sox baseball coming your way. White Sox and Tigers right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.